Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm back from Hawaii. I was surfing this week. High surf warnings. You're listening to the radio out there. My wife's in the car. It's going to be 8 to 15 feet. And the whole time I'm saying, oh my God, I can't wait to get out there. She's going, I hope you're not going to go surfing. It's too big. I went. Oh God, it was so big I broke my leash. My board was a good football field away from me with these huge waves coming in. I thought, oh my God, this is it. I'm going to drown. And you know what? God sent down an angel. I don't know the guy's name. He was paddling out, crashing through the white water. And he made a left turn and got my board out as it was going in. And he paddled it on his board. I don't know, 100 yards to me. It was like the nicest thing. I said to him, thank you. Oh, you're welcome. I said, your mother raised you right. You're just terrific. And he said to me, could you please tell my wife? And you know what I did? I kind of jerry-rigged the leash. I tied a big knot into it, and I paddled back out again. You would think I would go in after that kind of an event, but no. I went back out again. And while I was in Hawaii having the greatest time surfing these monster waves, I knew my guest would be Dean Tribble from Manhattan Beach Meats, a real master at the meat business. And for those of you who are vegans and vegetarians, I respect that. God bless you. But for those of you who love meat, the best butcher shop in LA, my opinion, is in Manhattan Beach. Place has been there forever. And the owner is Dean Tribble. He was my guest at 7:15. And you know there's a skill set. Because if you go buy the meat at some other place, it doesn't taste as good. There's a skill in everything in life. Whether you're an Uber driver, you're good or bad at it, you take pride in whatever you do for a living. Dean Tribble takes pride in what he does. And this homemade teriyaki sauce they sell in these orange juice cans, jars, the best. But I knew I'd be talking about someone who's an expert in slicing and dicing and being a butcher, a good one, the best there is. You know how much I love the world of sports and art and surgery, and they're the same to me. So where do I see in my lifetime the Dean Tribble in sports? Someone who can slice and dice. In football, there was nobody better in my lifetime at running back than Barry Sanders. For 10 years, he played for the Detroit Lions. Never won a Super Bowl, but you still had to see him. Must watch TV, let alone seeing it in person. This is what it sounded like. A game being called. Listen to the announcer. The excitement of just watching something you'll never see again. I asked Fred Dreyer, my guest last week, when I say the word Barry Sanders, you're a football player, Fred Dreyer, who do you think of? What do you think of? What's your clapper vision for Barry Sanders? He said, you like to surf, Doc. You know those guys, they ride those big long boards and they're just happy to go down the front of the wave? That's a typical running back. But you know those guys who surf the little boards and they go slashing up and down the wave and use the energy of the wave? That's Barry Sanders. He's one of those shortboard guys who uses the defensive line like a wave and just goes up and down that wave and slashes it. Fred Dreyer with a brilliant clapper vision for Barry Sanders. This is what it sounds like.
Pitch out to Barry, left side, hole, 35, 40, Barry on the run to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, look out, 30, they'll never catch him, see you later, touchdown, Lions, Barry Sanders, 68 yards.
Here's Kid Rock, the iconic rock and roller, growing up in Detroit, talking about seeing, slicing and dicing like none other from Barry Sanders.
I live, breathe, and bleed Detroit. My dad's been a season ticket holder since I was a kid, and you know, it was tough going to those games for a lot of years. It was brutal being a Lions fan. But I will say this, that Barry Sanders, I mean, that was what kept people coming for a lot of years. So if there's football fans out there that never got to see Barry Sanders, you know, play the game of football live. There's no way to explain it. You can watch the highlights and stuff, but still just being there where you get the perspective of the whole field and, you know, watch plays developing and see the way that guy just cut and juke people is just is insane.
Cut and juke people. That's artist to artist. Kid Rock to Barry Sanders. Everybody always talks about who's the greatest player of all time. It's hard to talk about a player outside of their era. Oscar Robertson versus Russell Westbrook. It's just silly because the basketball was different. No three-point shot. Pete Maravich didn't have a three-point shot to deal with. But if he did, he would have set every kind of record. But here's Curtis Martin, the Hall of Fame running back, talking about you can actually go into a different era with Barry Sanders, and he still would have been the best.
When I look at players like Jim Brown, at one time he was one of the biggest guys on the field. I think he would be different in today's game. Barry Sanders is a guy that no matter what year, you can say 1920 and you can say 2012, he will still be best running back in the NFL any given time.
Where does this skill set come from? Michael Jordan, the greatest, right? The GOAT, greatest of all time, was cut from his high school basketball team. At 8:15, we're going to be talking to Clyde Drexler. Cut from his high school basketball team. You sometimes need that flame. Oral Hershiser, you need a Tommy Lasorda to change his name to Bulldog. You need that you can't do it being told to you once, and then you spend the rest of your life saying, yes, I can. Barry Sanders, his dad, never really publicly said he was proud of him. You knew he was. You knew he loved his son. But here is William Sanders introducing his son, Barry Sanders, who I'm telling you is the greatest running back, for the Hall of Fame, in the NFL Hall of Fame, saying, nope, he's the third best one. This is his own father.
There was one person in Barry Sanders' life who did not think he was the best running back of all time.
First, I want to say hello to the greatest running back that ever lived, the number one running back we ever lived. He's not with us today. I think he's with his family in Los Angeles, Mr. Jim Brown.
Thank
you. So I
want
to say hello to him, Jim. I was supposed to have a 30-second speech. I'm going to make it quick. And now I want to introduce you to the third best running back that ever lived, Barry Sanders.
That's his father. This is Barry Sanders' brother, Byron, talking about the tough love William Sanders gave his kids.
Growing up and trying to understand, you know, why is he as hard as he is? Why is he so hard on us? There's no doubt about his motivation. I understand, you know, it was love.
And in high school, Barry Sanders did not play running back his first 3 years in high school. He was not doing well on the football field.
I'm not talking about Coach Shepard at North High, but he didn't play him right. He didn't think Barry would ever be a great running back. He wouldn't play Barry a running back.
And he would just lose it. He would be like, you know, GD, you know, these crazy coaches. You need to be running back. You know, they got these, you know, kids that can't run out of sight in a day. And, you know, he was going off on me. And I was just, you know, it's like, what did I do?
Well, he became a junior in high school. He ain't playing running back, and no college is trying to recruit him until his senior year. Listen to the story.
And what I remember about that year most is that I was really just concerned, not where I, you know, that I was playing out of position or anything like that. I was just concerned that I hadn't received any letters to go to college. And I was thinking, man, this is my junior year and I haven't received anything from anybody. You know, what am I going to do? At the start of the summer, going into my senior year, you know, I go to my dad and was kind of explaining to him that, you know, I really need to concentrate on working out this summer and getting ready to try to earn a scholarship. And he just looked at me like he always would, you know, no nonsense, and said, well, hey, son, your working out is going to be working with me this summer. At that point, it was understood that, you know, when he needed me to work, that's what I did. The only thing is, you know, the pay wasn't that great. But in the end, it did pay off.
Just recently in my garage, I found a whole bunch of wooden boxes that held the tools, my dad's Cincinnati drill, Hill's Milwaukee Sawzall. I used to carry those things. I was 10 years old, 9 years old. I got big triceps. I got some big arms that allow me to surf. But I never went to a gym growing up. I just schlepped his tools. Yeah, go to work with your dad, Barry Sanders. You don't need to go to the gym. But then finally, a new coach for his high school, who the light bulb goes on. Hey, I got Barry Sanders. Maybe he should be the running back in high school for the team. Thank you.
You know, I was always at the game on Friday night. You know, I was that kid that was always here with my dad. And so now, after so many things that happened, I'm the starting running back at North High School. And not only that, but I'm having a career year at running back. I cannot even explain it to you. And for me, just being on the field, playing the game, that was where I was at home. That's you know, really all I wanted to do.
And listen to the classiness of Barry Sanders when he could break a record selfishly in the last game of senior year. And the coach says, it's up to you. We can break the records or you can let the young kids play in the last game. And he says, let the young kids play.
Last game of season, we were winning and we against Wichita East, and we knew we were going to make it to the playoffs.
It was me and another kid that year that was pretty much battling it out for the city rushing title.
Came off the field and I called him over and I asked him. I said, Barry, I can keep you in and you can rack up some yards. We can try to get that title, or I can put the young kids in. What do you want to do? He said, Coach, let the young kids play. There wasn't a second of hesitation from that young man. Let the young kids play.
At that point, because of all the great things that had happened for me, just was not that important.
But then the day came where Barry Sanders had to be his own man. He had to defy his dad. His dad wanted him to go to Oklahoma. Barry Sanders said, no, I'm going to Oklahoma State. Toughest day of his life.
I loved the fact that Thurman was there. You know, I thought it was kind of cool that there was a guy that had had all that success, and now I get to go to school with him. And, you know, I mean, for me, so my mind was somewhere totally different.
Barry chose Oklahoma State against his father's wishes.
That was one of the most difficult days of my life at that point. He was not excited about me going to Oklahoma State. The morning that Oklahoma State came to sign me, coach came to the house before school. Dad walks to the front door. Coach tries to shake his hand. He wouldn't shake his hand. He walks out of the house and says, I think he's making a mistake. And he walks out. And I was so hurt and confused. But I knew for me that was the right thing to do. You know, and that was probably the first time in my life I'd ever, you know, went against his wishes or what have you. But, you know, it was just a very difficult day for me.
Listen to Thurman Thomas talking about him coming to the team.
It was my senior year. We were playing, getting ready to play the University of Oklahoma. And Barry Switzer, who's the head coach at University of Oklahoma, says, whatever you do, don't hurt Thurman. I was like, ah, okay.
And they all looked at me like I was crazy. I said, you don't want to play against this freshman back that they have named Barry Sanders. Well, I'd never heard of Barry Sanders. I said, we have a tough enough time with Thurman, but you won't ever touch this kid.
And then he has the greatest college year of all time, practically.
It didn't take long for William to get on the bandwagon real quick.
Sanders had arguably the greatest collegiate season ever, setting 34 records. He rushed for 2,628 yards and scored 39 touchdowns in 11 games.
39 touchdowns in 11 games. Do the math. Barry Sanders cut through the defense like Dean Tribble cuts through that ribeye steak. But he also was not appreciated till his senior year in high school. He had to have that drive with his dad telling him you're only the third best. What does it take to get to that level? Maybe it does take that rejection early in your life to just say, no, I'm better. We'll get into that, and I'll tell some more stories about Hawaii. But first, I want to talk to my favorite basketball player, the great Clyde Drexler, coming up next here on the Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The Big Three playoffs start tomorrow on CBS and CBS Sports from the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans. I'm joined now by one of the greatest basketball players we've ever seen, the great Clyde Drexler. Clyde, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
It's my pleasure to be with you. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing great. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, Clyde Drexler, and I took care of Wilt Chamberlain's hip many years ago. So I want to know first thing, at 57 years old, I'm 62 years old, how's your hips? How are your knees? How's your shoulders? How's your back? How are you orthopedically?
Orthopedically, Doc, thank God I am fine. No problem. I still run. I can do anything I want to do. I never have any aches or pains. And I attribute that to not only having a degree in kinesiology and learning how to take care of your body, but as an athlete, I took extreme care of doing the right things, eating right, staying in great shape, never getting out of shape. And I think all of those things contribute as you get older.
You know, I was a fellow of Dr. Curlin and Dr. Job in 1988, and my classmate was Bruce Mosley. He became the Houston Rocket team doctor. Did you know Dr. Mosley?
Yes, I do. Knew him very well. I think Bruce did a meniscus surgery on one of my knees many, many years ago. A great guy and a really good orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, he was my classmate, a fellow at Curlin Joe.
You've been around some greats, Doc. I mean, the Dipper, come on. Who can say they actually did work on the Dipper, the greatest player to ever play the game?
Well, there you go. He was, you know, just probably like you, Clyde Drexler. Once you get to know a player of that magnitude and they trust you, which he did, next thing you know, I'm in his house. He wanted to watch the Olympics with me every year. And to talk about the history of basketball, sports in America, Wilt Chamberlain was just a remarkable person to know. But I have someone closer that I've taken care of named Terry Gannon. And you and Terry Gannon have history together because he was the point guard for North Carolina State and Jimmy Valvano. Tell us what that was like, Clyde Drexler, from your perspective, that game.
Well, Dr. Clapper, that was a great game. I think Gannon has done quite well. I think he's doing golf on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's done quite well in his second career. A really nice guy. I think Terry was he played point guard for North Carolina State back in the day. Playing against Five Slamma Jamma, obviously that was going to be a great game. But they had a better team than people realized. And they won about five games on the en route to the finals exactly the same way. Hmm. Where they were down, they had to foul, the other team had to depend on them to miss their free throws in order for them just to get back into the game. And so when you can beat five good teams the exact same way, that's not luck.
Right.
That was destiny.
Well, that just shows the class and why they made the correct decision having Clyde Drexler be the commissioner. I want to ask you something, Clyde. Your opinion, because you live through it. This is your life. Today I'm talking about Barry Sanders and the fact that the coach of the high school team, the first 3 years in high school, did not recognize his talent and play him as a running back. It was not until a new coach in his senior year in high school that he blossoms as the greatest running back in high school and then ultimately in college. Didn't this happen to you in your high school, that the coach did not see you, didn't even take you on the high school basketball team until later, till your senior year? What did that do for you to be rejected almost in this very field of basketball, and it's Clyde Drexler?
Well, Doc, I will tell you, Barry, you know, sometimes coaches play a huge part in the lives of young athletes before they even realize who they are. And so coaches can help bring out that potential. And then on the other hand, they can help hide it as well and act like it was never there. And so I was lucky. My high school coach didn't pick me as a sophomore. And it wasn't because I wasn't good enough. It was because I think I was sick. We had the week of the tryouts.
Ah.
And, you know, back then, high school started in 10th grade, not 9th grade, right?
Right.
So if you were a 10th grader and you were trying to make the varsity, that was going to be a tall order,
right?
First of all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came in, I think I had the flu, I came in like 4 or 5 days late. So he said, new boy, drop down and give me some push-ups for being late. And of course, when you had the flu, you're sick, you're weak. I wasn't that strong anyway, and so I couldn't do all of the push-ups he wanted me to do. So he says, you come in my gym late and you're out of shape. So he says, get out.
No.
So that taught me a lot about being prepared, always being ready, and making yourself available for the opportunity. And he never got to see me play. Obviously, the other guys on the team knew who I was. They were all in my same neighborhood. We grew up together. And they were looking at the coach, like, do you know who that is? the coach didn't know.
Wow. But you know what?
About 6 months later after the season, I didn't play that year. Not even JV. I was so pissed. But later on, he came in and talked to my mom, and he said, hey, I want him to play for me. Next year, he'll be my star pupil. But he made a 360 change in his judgment, but because he did his research. But a lot of coaches today don't do that. Happened to Barry Sanders. Happens to a lot of guys. And see, but there were some great coaches back then who actually cared about their pupils.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I see coaches not really even knowing their own craft in the game that they coach.
Mm.
And it's an epidemic problem. We got some really bad coaches out there, both professionally, college, and on AAU level and in high school. And so what we have to do is make sure we hire better coaches, people who've been a part of those games, who understand what it's like to be on the battlefield, so that they can help these young student-athletes.
You know, Clyde, you've always marched to your own drummer. I mean, how many basketball players do we learn about who were finance majors in college? And you took kinesiology. Where did this independent streak come from? You did the things you weren't really designed to do, but you followed your own path. Where did that come from? Your mother, your father, your grandmother? Where did it come from?
Well, I think it's all of the above, but I also think it's in pursuit of an intellectual pursuit. I mean, you always want to be intelligent. You want to be well-informed. You want to be up-to-date. And so the more tools you can put in your tool belt, the better off, the more chances of success you're going to have.
Clyde, can you stay on for another segment? Because I got to ask you about, I could talk to you for hours, but I need to talk about the big three, but I really am fascinated by how much of a teacher you've become to all of us. Can you stay on for another segment? I just want to take a break to pay some bills.
It'd be my pleasure, Dr. Cooper.
All right. Thank you so much, Clyde. All right. Warriors, what a treat to be able to talk to the great Clyde Drexler. I just can't believe it, and I'm so happy about it. We'll pay some bills. We'll come back. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Cheeseburger in paradise. That sounds good. I'm joined by the great Clyde Drexler. Clyde, basketball, you know, they talk about soccer being the beautiful game. Now, the most beautiful game is the game of basketball because you cannot win it as a single player. You need the teamwork. And you could either be the enforcer, the physicality, but what, as a fan of yours, like many of us are, your attitude towards the game was one of finesse. You're like the Michelangelo of basketball. The glide that you did, the finesse aspect of it. Tell us where that came from, that you chose that route of the game of basketball rather than the physicality of it.
Well, Doc, I've always thought that the game of basketball, you got to remember, I grew up watching some of the greatest players ever. Julius Erving, George Gervin, Jerry West, Pete Maravich, and those guys were what? They were showmen. Mm. They were not only professionals, but they were great at what they did. I mean, they were fun to watch. They made the most difficult move look so easy. Mm. It's because they were highly skilled.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to emulate what they had brought up to the table, what I had seen as a kid. And so my thought was, don't do anything ordinary. Make the ordinary look easy.
Mm.
But to do the incredible, make that look as easy as you can, and that's how the glide came about.
But it's
part showmanship, part creative juices, and part wanting to be one of the best in the world.
Your coach in college, Guy Lewis, in 2003 admitted that he got hate mail. Why did you recruit Clyde Drexler? He's not that good. And went to bat defending you. Did you ever have a conversation with him about that he's standing up for you? Take us back to that time.
Dr. Clapper, that was 1983. And I had had a little reputation around the city that this guy's going to be the next Dr. J. And that came from Moses Malone and his friends with the Houston Rockets, right? Because I used to play with them all the time as a high school player.
Wow.
So they're like, this little guy is incredible. And I was 6'7", my real size, by 210, 215.
Mm-hmm.
So I had good size for a high school kid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where that came from. And so when Guy Lewis recruited me at the University of Houston, he got a little hate mail in 1980. It's not because he knew who I was. I don't think even he knew who I was. but the alumni didn't know either, because in my high school, we had a tough district.
Mm.
And my team couldn't get out of our district because we had so many good teams.
Mm.
And so they're thinking, this guy's not even – I mean, I made all district, all city, but I guess that wasn't enough.
Mm.
But, you know, when a young kid is playing great competition and he's putting up numbers like 27, 20 rebounds, 14 assists, 8 steals, 8 blocks, and whether they win or lose, you got to say that guy can play.
Clyde, I love it.
A lot of coaches back then, they didn't see it that way, and so they missed the boat. And so that's what I mean by we got to have better coaches, we got to have better judges of talent,
mm-hmm.
and people who can see talent before it actually gets there.
You know, as an orthopedic surgeon, it's a pleasure for me to take care of professional athletes. And what I love is, I could ask you, Clyde Drexler, you probably don't remember what you had for lunch yesterday, but boy, can you mouth off those statistics of like 50 years ago, what you did in high school. It's fantastic. I'll ask the player, when did you hurt yourself? Third quarter, 2 seconds to go, blah, 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 blah. They can't tell you what they ate yesterday, but boy, they can tell you when that injury occurred. It's amazing. What was it like to meet that very first day Hakeem Olajuwon, and seeing that raw material? You must have just known, oh my God, this is going to be amazing.
No, not at all. Let me tell you something. Guy Lewis was responsible for that. You know, a friend of Guy's sent Hakeem to him. He sent him to a couple of colleges, and if you like him, you could keep him, and if you're not, you send him back to Nigeria. Here's a plane ticket, right? So that was the deal. And he had that relationship with this guy who had sent him other players.
Wow.
And the other players he said he sent him, he told them they were like 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet. But when they actually got stateside, they were 6'6", 6'7".
Ooh.
And, you know, they were not highly skilled. And so Guy Lewis would always say, unless they're close to 7 feet tall, it's not worth taking a risk. Because I got 6'6", 6'7", guys who can play.
Mm.
So you understand that.
Right.
So when he sent him Hakeem, I was there. Guy Lewis says, go out and see how tall this guy is. And if he's not this tall, we're going to put him back on the plane and send him back, right? But Hakeem got out the cab. He kept getting out and getting out. He was like 6'11", about 190, 195.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a tall, slim guy.
Mm.
And so what helped Hakeem, he really didn't have great basketball skills. Matter of fact, next to none. But what he did have was great legs. You could see the strength in his legs from playing soccer.
Mm.
And so Guy Lewis, what Hakeem had going for him was Guy Lewis thought he could teach any big guy how to be a good big man.
Mm.
And so that truly helped Hakeem Olajuwon. Had he gone to a coach who was a guard-oriented coach, it would have been a different story, guys.
So when you look,
Guy Lewis recognized that talent, thought he could teach him, and boy, did he. Between Guy Lewis, Moses Malone, being on that five Slammer Jammer team, Hakeem Olajuwon was a sponge, and the rest is history.
We're very much looking forward to the big three coming to the Staples Center, Clyde Drexler, and we're so proud that you're the commissioner. As an orthopedic surgeon, watching the maturity, the aging process of an athlete, there's no doubt you got to be a smarter player as you age, because the physicality changes, the elasticity of the collagen, why Achilles tendons rupture when you're 35 years old and not when you're really 21 years old. So there's that whole process of the aging process, but the intellectual aspect of the game gets sharper as you get older. Tell us the fun part for you about being a part of this Big Three.
Well, the Big Three has been an incredible journey. Put on by Ice Cube and co-founder Jeff Quantnitz. These guys work hard, 18-hour days. They love the Big Three. The fact that it has become a phenomenon where fans love it, the players love it, it's become a fabric of the American society,
mm-hmm.
in the summer for pro basketball.
Mm.
It's incredible. And the reason is because It was thought initially to be like old man basketball.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing old about the big three. It's half court, 3-on-3 professional basketball, and it's the best in the entire world. Mm. And the reason it's the best is because the players are known players. They're NBA All-Stars, and they can still play at 36, 37, 34, and they have a lot left in the tank. And the fact that it's half court, you know, and they play once a week, these guys are still who they are. And so that's what makes the big three so special.
Is it a rumor, or do you need three players and three orthopedic surgeons on the bench?
Well, you know, we did lower our age to 27 years of age. So we have a lot of 28, 29, 30-year-old players who played international basketball, had a couple years in the NBA, and these guys are raising the bar in the big three. But it doesn't hurt to have a couple of orthopedic surgeons on the bench. These guys still, you know, it's very competitive.
Right.
And sometimes they try to do things that they used to do, but sometimes it doesn't work out. But we have had very few injuries. These guys are smarter.
Mm-hmm.
They take good care of their bodies.
Yep.
They know their capabilities, and they stay within that. But the games are so competitive. They've been so much fun to watch.
I believe a big reason of the success, though, is because you're the commissioner, Clyde Drexler, because it is in your blood, the game of basketball. And in the end, that's the big winner. That James Naismith designed a perfect game that forces you to play as a team, not as an individual. And all these years later, we still see the fruits of his labor. That's why. But you're a big reason why it's such a success. Before I let you go, barbecue. Why is it so special to you, the whole idea of barbecue, and what makes barbecue so special?
Well, my family had a barbecue restaurant in downtown Houston for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
It closed, we still have a couple branches, one on the campus of University of Houston, but it's in our blood. I grew up working in the barbecue business. Obviously, it taught me a lot about how to be an entrepreneur, how to treat people in terms of customer service, and it just made you a better person because you're always dealing with a lot of people. So you got to get along with people, you got to work with them. So that helps in the world of sports. Tremendously, right?
That's
so
exactly right.
I had a good foundation there, but good barbecue is a thing of beauty, Doc. It doesn't get any better. And don't wait until the 4th of July to do it, because, you know, you know there are a lot of people who are vegans, vegetarian,
right?
And I truly understand that. But for the people who still eat meat, a little red meat every now and then, barbecue is perhaps the best tasting meat of all.
Clyde Drexler, I know the reason you have sustained such a long career without injury. As an orthopedic surgeon, I know the answer. It's because of your love of barbecue. You combine the B's, the B of basketball and the B of barbecue, to make the greatest life you can have. I want to thank you so much for making time to be with us.
Doc, it's my pleasure. I want to say it's a pleasure being here with you. You're a living legend. Your knowledge is incredible. You're a walking history book. And it's always a pleasure to come on your show.
Thank you so much, Clyde Drexler. And we'll be pumping up the big three, but it's because of the brains behind the organization, the commissioner. It all starts from the top. Thanks again, and God bless you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right. The great Clyde Drexler. Wow. What a joy. All right. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. The Andrew sisters. The Butcher's Boy. This is in honor of the great Dean Tribble from Manhattan Beach Meats, my guest at 7:15, who could glide through that meat to cut out the best filet mignon or ribeye steak. Manhattan Beach Meats, don't miss it. My favorite. And the finesse, the glide of the knife, but the glide in sports at 8:15. What a pleasure to talk to the great Clyde Drexler, the commissioner of the Big Three League. 3-on-3 half-court basketball with some of the greatest players. But having a commissioner like him, they're blessed. And they're coming to the Staples Center. Can't wait to see them. That'll be great. Well, I was away for a week this week. No surgery, no patients. I was on vacation. I ran to Hawaii, and as soon as I landed, they started saying on the radio, in my rent-a-car, with my wife, High surf warnings. Big swell coming out of the southwest. The south-facing beaches on Oahu, which is where I surf, going to be massive. 10 to 15-foot waves. And I watched them. If you watch, follow me on Twitter, I took pictures. At Dr. Robert Clapper. You'll see what these massive waves look like. They're tiny from a distance, but three times your height. It's like an apartment building coming at you. So I got on my bike and I rode to my surfboard at the Duke Hanamoku statue. Unlocked my lock. Met the guys at the beach. And it's pitch black. I'm there at 5:15 in the morning. It's not first light. It's not dawn. It's not sunrise. It's dark. And my friend that I usually paddle out with wasn't there, Jason. But another guy I've been out with before, in his 60s like me, his name is Moses. And I said, Moses, you going to paddle out now? Half a mile I paddle out to this one break way out over the reefs. It's pitch black out, but there was a moon. And enough moonlight shimmering on the ocean. It's good enough for me. You going, Moses? Yeah. Come on, Doc. Let's go. And there I am in pitch blackness, putting my 11-foot triple stringer. The board weighs 60 pounds. It's so big I had Sippy, who's now retired, who made this board for me, put a handle in it because my arms can't get completely around this board. It's 4 inches thick. It's massive. It's like a Lincoln Continental. I throw it into the wave, the shoreline. The water is pretty warm, so there's no chill. But the turbulence, it looked like a washing machine out there. And I start paddling with Moses. And you can see the white water, which picks up the moonlight. And we're talking, and we're paddling. And I'm about to paddle for a half a mile. Can you imagine? We get out to the break. We get out to the spot. And, of course, there's two guys already out there, which I couldn't believe. And now you have to wait because it's not like they're constantly coming, the waves. They come in sets. How many waves will be in this set? Will it be two? Will it be five? Will it just be one? You get a feeling, and you're looking out over the horizon. It's total meditation. You cannot think of anything else. You can't think of work. You can't think of your life. You can't think of anything other than looking out on the horizon for when, as Duke Hanamoku called the big waves, he called them the bluebirds. And I'm just looking. And then all of a sudden, I can see the horizon lift up. And here comes, I don't know if there's going to be three or four, but the first one. It was huge. I turn my board around to face towards the shore, and I start paddling. And I'm paddling and paddling. And all of a sudden, because you don't have eyes behind the back of your head, all of a sudden you feel the board raise up. Can you imagine lying on your stomach, and now you're rising up the size of an apartment building, the size of this building here at the LA Live? That says ESPN on top. You go from being on the ground floor to all of a sudden rising up to the top of the building. You just feel it. And your heart starts to pound. You take your arms out of the water. You rise up immediately onto your feet. And now you're looking down from the roof to the bottom of LA Live. And it's like a F-16 fighter jet just got attached to the board. As you go flying down the face of that wave, knowing I better not fall. Here's the problem. It's pitch black. But I could see the shimmering of the light from the moon on the white water. I've not really had that experience before. As I'm flying down the face of the wave in front of my pure Hawaiian friends, it was the most exhilarating moment I think I've ever had in the ocean. And then as soon as I was done riding this beast, I couldn't wait to... I mean, you're screaming on the top of your lungs. Not for an audience, just because you're just so filled with energy. I paddled back out and did it all over again. What a pleasure to be back here on the show. Next week, we're going to talk to a guy that I surf with on the South Shore of Oahu. His name is Todd. Todd Camminson. He's been teaching surfing for 30 years. Thousands of people taught how to surf on the South Shore of Oahu. He'll be my guest next Saturday. Until then, have a great week. And thanks for listening and telling your friends. And I'll see you on the radio.